Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Cote Kloot is a Dutch journalist. He's also a music producer and a maker of radio and TV documentaries. When Co was a young lad, his life changed dramatically. Why? Because he heard this. Who are the brain police? That's music from Freak Out, the 1966 debut album by the Mothers of Invention, featuring Frank Zappa. Co became an instant fan of Frank's music, and a few years later found himself face-to-face with Frank himself for a short interview. The result was the beginning of a friendship that lasted until Zappa's death in 1993. Co eventually became a radio producer and even worked on a few projects with Zappa over the years. Now Co has transcribed his chats with Zappa into a book titled Frank and Co, Conversations with Frank Zappa, 1977 to 1993. The book not only gives insight into the mind of Frank, but also chronicles the growth of a friendship between the two men. But as Co tells our very own Steve Gotcher, it all goes back to that day when Co dropped the needle on that first album.
So I played that record over and over again at the age of 12. My musical life changed instantly. And I said, what is this? I don't get it. I don't understand it, but there's something to it that I must explore. And then within a few weeks, my father said, hey, listen, you've been playing that album by the Mothers of Invention so much. It's pretty old. It's already 5-6 years old, but here's a new one. And he handed me 200 Motels. So I put that on the record player. I can honestly say it changed my life and laid down a path for me to follow musically. And I was overwhelmed. And that was in 1971, I think, 71, 72. And then in 73, I saw Frank live for the first time in concert. And then it was all settled. And then I said to myself, when I went home, I was totally in shock because it was a mainly instrumental show. And I went home and I was totally confused. And I said, if ever I get to meet this man, I'm going to tell him what an impact this show had on my life. Not knowing that 4 years later, we became friends.
Yeah, so you're like the embodiment of every real music lover's dream, because we all think about what it would be like to get to know one of our musical heroes, and you did that and became friends. That's amazing. Now, you first interviewed Frank in 1977 when you were 18 years old. You must have been really nervous. Tell me about that experience.
It was the weirdest thing. I've described it in the book, but it was the weirdest thing. My father had arranged for me that I could be present at a session that he had in a hotel talking to some people from the press. Because my father knew the promo guy from Warner Brothers really well. And he says, hey, Jan, can you take Co and maybe he can say hi to Frank? So I brought a cheapo tape recorder and my mother's camera. And I went to the hotel. And the promo guy said, sit in the lobby and wait for me because you never know what's going to happen. I'll try to get you your seconds to shake hands or get an autograph, but that's it. Then two guys walk in and they looked really freaky. And one of them had long hair and a mustache and a goatee. And I thought to myself, is this Frank? No, he's too fat to be Frank. So... Or is he? So I was really puzzled. And of course, I was very nervous. The slide door of the little hotel lobby opened. A guy walks in with hair like an Italian businessman, a small mustache, tiny goatee, an extremely expensive jacket, and a business suitcase. An Italian manager, CEO type looking guy. And I was so baffled and nervous. And I said, this can be Frank. I see no curls. Mm-hmm. I see no demon. I see nothing. I see a businessman. And he looks at me. And all I could say is, are you Frank Zappa? And he looks at me like, who is this? And where's my bodyguard? And he says, I sure am. He goes into the elevator and away he is. And I thought, oh, I blew it. The Warner guy comes in. He says, now, come with me. So we go up, and just when everybody was leaving, the Warner Brother guy says, Frank, can I introduce you to somebody? This is Co. His father's name is also Co, and he's a very important radio guy for us. And Co is probably one of your biggest fans in Holland. And Frank looks at me and he says, and you still had to ask if it was me when you saw me in the lobby? And I said, And he says, you were just being careful, huh? And I said, yeah. He says, okay, relax. And then I could ask some questions. And then I had this interview. And we had a very nice talk. And then I said goodbye, and I'll see you at the show tomorrow, blah, blah, blah.
What happened that made it possible for you to win Frank's trust? Do you know when that moment came?
My answer would be, I might be the first person to have asked him, are you Frank Zappa?
And thus he trusted you.
Because most of the people who met him knew, and I just wasn't sure.
Did you ever think in your wildest dreams that you would become friends? Was that a goal in your life, or just evolved?
It evolved. It evolved in a way that he started to see me as a constant factor when I was here. One of the things I like so much about Zappa is that he was extremely interested in people. And when he found out that I wanted to go to the conservatory, but that I also wanted to be a producer, he gave me a break that is really like a dream. In 1980, the radio station that my father was attached to got the rights to record his show in Rotterdam. Frank, through his then manager, Bennett Glatzer, said, there's two demands. I want a copy of all the multi-tracks, and I want my friend Co to be the supervisor of the mix. And the people that I knew at Fire Radio says, what? You're 21 years old. You're just a conservatory student who wants to be a producer. And Zappa asks you to supervise his mix. And maybe it was just a joke for Frank. And to give me a break, I spent 3 days. And the engineer was happy that I was there because I knew the music. Mm-hmm. So I could cue him all the way. So the mix went very fast. So I had my first job for Frank.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so over the next few years, you recorded conversations with Frank, which you transcribed in your book, and you even worked with him now and then on various projects, and then you became friends over the years. And then during a phone conversation in 1989, Frank told you that he had cancer. How did you react to that?
I was baffled, especially the way he said it. He just said it like extra after a long conversation. He said, oh, by the way, yeah, I got cancer. And I was shocked, and I said, can it be treated? And we'll see. And that was it. Those are moments that you are going to start to think back. Here I was, this teenager in Amsterdam doing his first interview, and now your idol telling you that he is very sick.
Hmm. Yeah. In 1990, you went to the Utility Muffin Research Kitchen, UMRIC, as some people call it. And recorded several days of conversations with Frank in the studio. Tell me about that experience.
Well, he knew that I was going to make a four-hour radio special in Holland called Supplements, which would air on his 50th birthday. So it was a birthday celebration, and we already had agreed that at the end of the show, which ran from 8 till midnight, we would call him and say happy birthday. So I did all these interviews with him. He gave me a lot of exclusive audio material. And so we constructed this whole program. And those days were very inspiring. He was extremely nice to us. And he had to take breaks because he was not feeling well. But for the rest, it was just fun and a great experience.
Frank passed away on December 4th, 1993, but that previous summer, you flew to L.A. to see your friend one last time. Tell me about that meeting, if you can.
You know, when you have relatives or friends in your neighborhood or in your inner circle that you know are not well and may die, you see them often and you try to see them as often as you can. But if somebody lives on the other side of the planet, you know that if he's really ill and you're going to see him, when you say goodbye, it's going to be the last time. Mm-hmm. So I went over, and Frank was there. And the last time I saw him was a year before in Frankfurt. I walk into the basement. He's sitting there with a cigarette in his hand, and he's very, very skinny, has a long beard. The first word he says to me is, "Relax," because he thought I was shocked about what I saw. Now, I have to go back to the book, because in the book, there's a little snippet, a little piece of paper where Frank had written down in 1979 his home address. And he gave it to me. That's why I'm very happy that I saved it. And he gave it to me and he said, "No matter what you're going to do in your life or what your business will be, at this address, there will always be a cup of coffee for you." That is a moment you don't forget. I was invited to Frank's house for a cup of coffee, and this is his address, you know. So here's this 18-year-old fan being very happy with a little piece of paper. Fast forward 93, I'm in the basement. He offered me some coffee. Gail was walking in and out. Dweezil was walking in and out. At one instance, we were alone. And he says to me, "So how's business? How's the radio thing going? How's your own music going?" He knew I was a musician. I said, "Well, it's cool. Great." Menno says hi. And he says, "So what's your business here in LA? And I say, "Well, I came to see you." And he says, "Yeah, I know you're here, but what are you doing? Are you going to interview people, or what is it for the radio that you're doing?" And I said, "No, I'm not here for my work. I'm here to see you." And then he looked at me, and I just could see him thinking, wait a minute. He lives 20 minutes drive from Amsterdam. This is LA. Did this guy take all the effort just to be here for a half hour? And he got irritated when I didn't respond what my work was. He said, "I know you're here, but what is your business here?" I said, "I don't have any business. I'm just here to be with you." And that baffled him somewhat. And then he says, "Oh, wait a minute. You came for that cup of coffee." And that is one of the most intense moments of my life. I said, "How can you remember that? A person who meets 500 people a day, handing me a note in 79, inviting me for a coffee, and referring to it as that cup of coffee." And I said, "Frank, you..." And then he said again, "Relax." So we stood up, I gave him a hug, and I felt how fragile, how, what's the English word?
Frail.
Frail he was. So I didn't know what to say. So I said, "Okay, I got to go now." And I said, "I'll see you next time."
Yeah.
And he said, "Sure." And that was it.
It's been 30 years since Frank passed away. And yet his music is still as vital, seemingly, as it was when he was still around. Do you think his musical legacy will continue into the years?
Yes. Because it's often yet to be really discovered quality. I had the big advantage of being with him. Mm-hmm. So I call myself some sort of a connoisseur on his music. And sometimes I just sit and I say, how can anybody of that age write something this beautiful? This man was such a incredible force of creativity and insight and intelligence combined. Sometimes for me, it's just baffling. How can you write Duke of Prunes and then turn around and write Big Like Emma? What is in his mind that is a message to us? And the message to us is that music is universal. There's no such thing as high or low culture. To make the circle round, when you asked me in the beginning, what was it that you heard in Frank's music as a young boy that attracted you so much, it's the honesty. It's honesty without compromise. Mm.
Well said. Cody Clute, thanks so much for talking with us today, and thanks for your book, Frank & Co. It's an intimate and insightful look at one of the greatest composers of our time.
And I want to add one thing, if I may.
Please.
There's a lot of people who helped me with this book, There was a lot of audio that had to be transcribed literally. So I needed a native speaker to transcribe it. And one of your listeners is a friend of mine who is very, very, very important for me in the creation of this book. Dave Pearson from Menominee, if it hadn't been for him, the book wouldn't be here. So right. I want to thank Dave. And I'm very happy that I know at least one of your faithful listeners.
That's great. That's great to hear. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the time.
Coda Clute is the author of Frank and Co., Conversations with Frank Zappa, 1977 to 1993. He spoke with Beta Steve Gotcher. Find out more about Co's friendship with Frank at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, John Waters, Scott Thompson, Dave Foley, and Coda Clute. If you want to hear it again or catch up on past episodes, head over to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast catcher and click subscribe, follow, and like. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Some people say that he joined a Kiss cover band and he rocks three nights a week in some chicken wings bar.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
My empire is crumbling!
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
You're not a plate of croissants.